Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. I need to warn you, this is not going to be a pretty princess program tonight. All right? It just isn't. There's too much really vile stuff that seems to be popping up like mushrooms in cow pies out in the field and after a rainstorm, if you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. I don't know. It's pretty scary. This bit about Lara Logan, I guess y'all know about this already. I hadn't heard about it until this evening. Lara Logan, the correspondent, I think she's the chief foreign correspondent for CBS News. On February 11th, that would be what, Friday? 13, 14. Yeah, on Friday. It was the day that Mubarak resigned. She was in Tahrir Square, covering the excitement and the jubilation for a segment on 60 Minutes, and that was to be broadcast later. And she and her team, her production team, her sound and camera people, and their security were surrounded. During this so-called celebration, it was a mob, according to a statement issued by CBS, it was a mob of more than 200 people whipped into a frenzy. She was physically and sexually assaulted repeatedly by members of this crowd. When she got separated from her crew and her security team, the statement from CBS says she was surrounded and suffered a brutal and sustained sexual assault and beating before being saved by a group of women and an estimated 20 Egyptian soldiers. She reconnected with the CBS team, returned to her hotel, and returned to the United States on the first flight the next morning. She currently is in the hospital, according to CBS. The family has... CBS News said it would have no further comment on the matter, and the family has asked for privacy. There were many instances, of course, of assault against news photographers, camera people, reporters from the West, from the Mideast. Repeatedly sexually assaulted and beaten. Remember Shirley Sherrod, the former Agriculture Department employee who was attacked in the media by another piece of white scum, Andrew Breitbart? She's decided to sue him. She's African-American. She initially lost her job. Everybody jumped all over her because of the piece of evidence, an edited videotape that the meaning of which had been completely changed by this right-wing piece of human excrement, this Breitbart thug. She filed a defamation lawsuit in Washington, D.C., Superior Court, against Breitbart today, before the whole story came out. Remember, these right-wing scum, these are neo-Nazis. If I ever come across Andrew Breitbart, there will be nastiness occur. Let me just put it that way. I hate these people. I mean, just viscerally, deep down in my gut, just thoroughly. So he attacks this woman. Isn't this the truth, though? Isn't this what right-wing, white, male conservatives always do? They attack women. And when they launch attacks against men, it's usually in a cowardly, stinking way, a remote, saying things about them and then running and hiding behind their corporate skirts of their masters. And I don't know. I'm telling you, it's not going to be a good program. Anyway, Breitbart is the worst of the worst. He's like a lot of these right-wing bloggers. There's nothing that he can do that's legitimate, so he makes stuff up. This is what they do. This is what the right wing does in this country now. This is why they need to be stomped into the ground. They really do. The right wing needs to be crushed in the United States like a cockroach. It needs to be ground into the dirt. I'm telling you, they're destroying the country. Before the whole story came out, Ms. Sherrod was forced to resign as Department of Agriculture's head of rural development here in Georgia. When the error, the trickery, the debauchery of this pig bastard Breitbart was finally discovered, she was offered her job back. Well, a new position. She declined. In a statement yesterday, she filed the lawsuit yesterday. In a statement yesterday, she said, "This lawsuit is not about politics or race. It is not about right versus left, the NAACP or the Tea Party. It is about how quickly, in today's internet media environment, a person's good name can become collateral damage in an overheated political debate." This pig bastard Breitbart was served with papers Saturday at the Conservative Political Action Conference. Oh, yeah, we're all here, aren't we? Sherrod wants an apology, unspecified damages, and assurances the video is taken down from the website. In her lawsuit, she says that she suffered, quote, enduring damage to her reputation as well as emotional distress and financial damages from losing her federal job. The pig bastard Breitbart issued a statement. He said, quote, "I can promise you this, neither I nor my journalistic website will be or can be silenced by the institutional left, which is obviously funding this lawsuit." That's what he said. That's what he said. You lying son of a bitch. Andrew Breitbart, what a piece of human excrement. Do you have a mother, Breitbart? Were you raised by human beings? Seriously. Now, you'll get this message because your little cockroach colleagues in the right-wing blogosphere are busily recording every word. Well, get it down right, you little bastards. The question to Breitbart, did you have parents? Were you brought up in an outhouse someplace? In a toilet? In a public urinal? Did you have parents and this is how they raised you to deliberately and maliciously attack a woman for sport, you pig? Is this how your parents brought you up? Shame on you, Breitbart. And I bet your parents are just if they're still living, I bet they just hang their heads in shame about what a piece of human waste they raised. What was your family like, Breitbart? What was it like? What was your family life like? What was it like? What happened to you, you sick bastard? What happened to you? The same question be asked of this alcoholic thug on Fox News and this drug-addled person who blew out his eardrums on Premier Radio Network. It just goes on and on. What is wrong with you right-wingers? You're sick. Every single last one of you. You're sick. His statement. "I can promise you this. Neither I nor my journalistic websites will be or can be silenced by the institutional left." I got an institutional left for you, pal. God. There's more. South Dakota has decided to, the Republicans out there have, well, I'll share this with you when we come back. We got to take a break. Stick around. But they want to institutionally, they want to make it legal to walk up to someone who performs abortions and murder him on the street right there. Shoot him dead. We'll be back.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malone.
Twenty-one past the hour. Couple of emails here before I get to the South Dakota thing from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, regarding Breitbart. Michael writes, Andy is long overdue for a legal lesson in the intersection of the First Amendment and libel law. The woman has real damages to recoup. She lost her job because of his little foray into creative editing. And given his attitude, his mouth, and his reputation, I doubt that it will take a jury very long to climb over that hurdle of malicious intent. Yeah, I hope they nail the son of a bitch. That's how the Klan has been nailed repeatedly here in the South. That's how white racist operations in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, were wiped out through lawsuits. You know, you can't beat these sons of bitches. You can stomp them into the mud, and three more pop up. They're demons. They're not human. But the best way to get them is to bankrupt them. Just bankrupt them. Take their money. Bob writes, just an observation. When you talk about the right wing scum like Breitbart, you say these people are destroying the country. These people destroyed the country. You're using the wrong tense. What's left? Wars of aggression, a complete lack of accountability. Our, quote, Democratic president, end quote, proposed budget hacks away at everything but the corporate rich. The media is almost completely perverted, and Glenn Beck's frying up way too much crazy in his brain pan for general consumption. What's left? From Bob Alexander. Yeah. I hear you. South Dakota. A bill under consideration in South Dakota. By the way, that's the Mount Rushmore state. The bill under consideration there would make preventing harm to a fetus, to a cluster, to a zygote, to a cluster of cells the size of your little fingernail or smaller. Preventing harm to that thing, that little parasitical thing, that, yes, has the potential to become a human being. So does a handful, you'll pardon the expression, of sperm have a potential. What's next? Death for masturbating? Anyway, in the Mount Rushmore state, a bill would make preventing harm to this undifferentiated mass of cells a justifiable homicide. You get this? Kate Shepard writing at Mother Jones Online. I'm not going to do the whole thing. You can go to it yourself. The bill in South Carolina is an invitation to murder abortion providers. It would expand the definition of justifiable homicide to include killings that are intended to prevent harm to a fetus. A move that would make it legal to kill doctors who perform abortions. Do you understand this? This comes out of the mind of one of these sick bastard Breitbart, Glenn Beck type Republicans in the State House in South Dakota. Representative Phil Jensen, who does not believe women have a right to control their bodies. Women don't have a right to control anything. This son of a bitch wants all women on their backs in the bedroom or on their feet in the kitchen and their mouths shut, right? Right, Phil? Jensen did not return calls to his home or his office from Mother Jones requesting comment on the bill, which is co-sponsored by 22 other state representatives and 4 state senators. MotherJones.com. If you want to check it out. These are Republicans. These filthy bastards. These filthy, disgusting, disgusting bastards. 17 victims are suing the Pentagon over what is referred to as a plague of sexual violence. Gates is being sued. Rumsfeld is being sued. Have you been following this? Landmark lawsuit filed today against Defense Secretary Robert Gates and former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld alleges that the military's repeated failures to take action in rape cases created a culture where violence against women was tolerated, violating the plaintiff's constitutional rights. I would go even further and say it not only is it tolerated, in some instances, it's quietly encouraged. You ask these hard-ass generals, these combat-tested generals, and the ones that sit on their asses in the Pentagon, if they want women in the military. Rebecca Havrilla, who I believe is... she's one of the plaintiffs, I think. Former sergeant and explosive ordnance disposal technician. Did you see that movie... The Hurt Locker? That's what she did. She says there are 3 types of women in the Army. Bitch, dyke, and whore. We'll be right back. The cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another wall, another towel. And I'm where the homeless have their homes. So we pray to us in a different God as there are flowers. But they call religion our friend.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
All right, lawsuit was filed today against Robert Gates and his predecessor, Donald Rumsfeld. The suit alleges that the military's repeated failures to take action in cases of rape against female soldiers has created a culture where violence against women was tolerated. Rebecca Havrilla, a former sergeant and explosive ordnance disposal technician, said there are 3 types of women in the Army, bitch, dyke, and whore. During the 4 years that this soldier was on active duty, she was called all 3 by fellow soldiers, team leaders, even unit commanders. Once during a sexual assault prevention training, the 28-year-old South Carolina native claimed she watched a fellow soldier, a male, stripped naked, dance atop a table as the rest of the team laughed. While deployed in Afghanistan, Havrilla spent 4 months working under a man she alleges bit her neck, pulled her into his bed, grabbed her ass and waist on a daily basis. When on the last day of her deployment, she was raped by a soldier she considered a friend, she says it was the icing on the cake. But she calls herself lucky. The end of her military commitment was in sight. In other cases, soldiers have had to keep fighting alongside or even under the person who assaulted them, been ostracized by their units for reporting an attack, or, as another woman says, simply shoved to the side. Havrilla and 16 others are now plaintiffs in a class action suit filed today against Gates and Rumsfeld. The suit charges that despite ample evidence of the problem, both Gates and Rumsfeld, quote, ran institutions in which perpetrators were promoted, in which plaintiffs and other victims were openly subject to retaliation and ordered to keep quiet, end quote. The plaintiffs, in turn, have been, quote, directly and seriously injured by defendants' actions and omissions, end quote. The case's lead investigator, Keith Roman, says it's shocking and it's just hard to understand why they've held off. Families all over America send their young men and women to serve, and they do that at tremendous personal risk and danger, but this is not a risk that those families want to assume. And it goes on and on and on. And this story comes from the Daily Beast, another report, I believe, from AOL News. The lawsuit accuses two secretaries of defense of condoning, ignoring, and implicitly encouraging sexual abuse in the ranks. In a 42-page complaint filed in federal district court in Alexandria, Virginia, which contains phrases like effing whore, bitch, troublemaker, the plaintiffs, who include two men, believe it or not, come from every military branch. They charge they were victimized twice, once by their assailants and again by the institution they served. Myla Hader, a former Army criminal investigator who was raped by a co-worker, said the system is driven by rape myths. She says there is a pervasive attitude within Department of Defense that any man might commit these types of offenses, and therefore when these things do come up, it is seen as something that is committed by a peer or just another soldier and not taken seriously. Rape. And there's more. It goes on and on and on and on and on. If you want to just research it, do a Google on Gates Rumsfeld sued, and you will get more than you can possibly stomach. I don't know if I have time for this in this segment. I'm going to do it anyway. Al Gordon sent this to me. It's posted at, I think it's Crooks and Liars. Is it Crooks and Liars? I think it's Crooks and Liars. Al Gordon sent it to me, but it was posted by Paris Gnome. It says, I read this letter and I thought it should be shared. A profound insight into America's current march toward the black hole of despair felt by millions. Not by all. The wealthy, the connected, and the others fortunate enough to prosper in this one-sided country, this one-sided economy. America is fast losing its soul, devoid of compassion and a goodness that so many remember just a half generation ago, no longer the ability to recognize the path we are fast sliding down. With the end that can bring no good to anybody. The letter was written by Mark, a long-term unemployed man who has all but given up. I found this letter very troubling, but true. Here it is. Now, before I read it, it might be a creative exercise posted someplace. It might be somebody's idea of a joke. You make the decision. To the unemployed, sick, disabled, and poor, hello. I'm unemployed over 2 years now, a 99er without any benefits for 3 months. I followed unemployed friends almost from its start, never posted until now. That's a website. But I'm grateful for my time with you all. I did as asked with calls and emails, etc. I have a confession to make to you all. I'm a criminal. I've obeyed the Ten Commandments and all laws except I'm unemployed, and that's now a crime. I'm poor, and that's now a crime. I'm worthless, surplus population, and that's a crime. I'm a Main Street American citizen, born and raised in the USA, and that's now a crime, and I'm euthanizing myself as I write this note. So, arrest my corpse. This isn't a call for help. The deed is done. It's not what I wanted. Death is my best available option. It's not just that my bank account is $4, that I've not eaten a week, not because hunger pangs are agonizing. I'm a wimp. Not because I live in physical and mental anguish. Not because the landlady is banging on the door nonstop and I face eviction. Not that Congress and the president have sent a strong message they no longer help the unemployed. It's because I'm a law-abiding, though worthless, long-term unemployed older man who is surplus population. Had I used my college education to rip people off and steal from the elderly, the poor, the disabled, and Main Street Americans, I would be wearing different shoes now. A petty king. Hard work, honesty, loving kindness, charity, and mercy, and becoming unemployed and destitute, unable to pay your bills, are all considered foolishness and high crimes in America now. Whereas stealing and lying and cheating and being greedy to excess and destroying the fabric of America is rewarded and protected, even making such people petty kings and petty queens among us. Since the end of 2008, when corporate America began enjoying the resumption of growth, profits have swelled from an annualized pace of $995 billion to the current $1.66 trillion as of the end of September 2010. Over the same period, the number of non-farm jobs counted by the Labor Department has slipped from 13.4 million to 13 million. There is no recovery for the unemployed in Main Street. We taxpayers have handed trillions of dollars to the same bank and insurance industry that started our economic disaster with its reckless gambling. We bailed out General Motors. We distributed tax cuts to businesses that were supposed to use this lubrication to expand and hire. For our dollars, we have been rewarded with starvation, homelessness, and a plague of fear, a testament to post-national capitalism. 12 years ago, I lost the last of my family. 10 years ago, I lost the love of my life. Couldn't even visit him in the hospital because gays have no rights. I fought through and grieved and went on as best I could. 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with diabetes and stage 2 high blood pressure with various complications, including kidney and heart failure, diabetic retinopathy. These conditions are debilitating and painful. I'm on over 8 prescribed medications, which is very difficult without insurance and without income. But I struggled on, and my primary caregiver was very pleased with my effort over time. Still, these physical disabilities have progressively worsened. I've had a harder and harder time functioning. All the while, I give thanks to God because I know there are many more worse off than me, and I tried to help by giving money to charities and smiling at people who look down and sharing what little I had. I'm a college-educated man, worked 35 years in management, receiving written references and praise from every boss for whom I worked. Yet after thousands of resumes, applications, emails, phone calls, drop-ins, I failed to get a job even at McDonald's. I discovered there are 3 strikes against me. Most 99ers will understand. Strike 1, businesses are not hiring long-term unemployed. In fact, many job ads now underline, the unemployed need not apply. Strike 2, I'm almost 60. Employers prefer hiring younger workers who demand less and are better pack mules. Strike 3, for every job opening I've applied, there are over 300 applicants according to each business who allow a follow-up call. I believe the Congress and President have no intention of really aiding the unemployed due to various political reasons and their total removal from the suffering of most Americans and their cold-hearted and self-serving natures. Had they really wanted to help, they could have used unspent stimulus monies or cut foolish costs like the failed wars or foreign aid and farm subsidies. The unspent stimulus money alone could have taken care of all unemployed persons for 5 years or until the unemployment rate reached 7% if Congress and the President really wanted to help us. In any case, if I were to survive homelessness, and with those 3 strikes against me, in 7 more years I'll be near 70, with the new retirement age at 70. Now, who will hire an old homeless guy to work for 9 years with just a few years until retirement? So here I am. More when we come back. Strong, 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 destroy our hopes. Many dead tonight could be. Strong wind, strong wind, strong wind. Many dead tonight could be. And be homeless, 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 homeless. Somebody.
up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So this email, this letter that was posted at the website Unemployed Friends. Let me go on. So here I am, the writer declares. Long-term unemployed, older man with chronic health problems, now totally broke, hungry, facing eviction. My landlady should really be an advocate for the unemployed. She bangs on my door demanding I take action. A phone call and a please are not enough for her. She's angry. She's right to be angry with me. I'm unemployed, as apparently everyone is now angry with us unemployed. Food banks and other charities are unable to help any more folks. They're overwhelmed with the poor in this nation. So I have the freedom, quote, quote, to be homeless and destitute and pursue happiness in garbage cans and then die. Yay for America, huh? It's cold. A diabetic homeless older person will experience amputation in the winter months, so I will be raiding garbage cans for food as my body literally falls apart, a foot here, a finger there. I've experienced and even worked with pain from my disease. Hardship I can face. I just cannot muster the courage to slowly die in agony and humiliation in the gutter. I have no family. I have no friends. For the past 2 years, I've had nobody to talk with, as people who know me react to the unemployed label as if it were leprosy and contagious. I'm not a bad person. In fact, people really like me. But everyone seems to be on a tight budget these days and living in incredible fear. It is hopeless since we all are hearing more and more that we unemployed are to blame for unemployment, that we are just lazy, that we are no good, that we are sinners, that we are druggies, yet we are the victims who suffer and are punished while the robber baron, banksters, and tycoons become senators, members of Congress, presidents, and petty kings. So the only option left for me is merciful self-euthanasia. It is with a heavy heart that I have set my death in motion, but what I am facing is not living. So off I go. I've made peace with God and placed my burden on Jesus, and he forgives me. This nation has become evil to the core, with cold-hearted politicians and tycoons squeezing what little Main Street Americans have left. It is not the America into which I was born, the land of the free and the home of the brave, with kind folks who help neighbors. It is now land of the tycoon haves and the rest of us have-nots who march into hopelessness and despair. Every unemployed person I've met over these past 2 years has been saintly, sharing what little they have and being charitable, being kind and patient and supportive. Isn't it amazing that we Americans who suffer so much have not taken to the streets in violence, riots, or gotten out the guillotines and marched on tycoons in Washington in revolt, as would happen in most other nations? But rather, we plead with deaf politicians, please help us. We don't demand huge sums, just $300 a week, barely enough to cover housing for most of us. Most of all, we say, please help us get a job. Please allow us dignity. I can't help but juxtapose our plight to the tycoons and politicians. They are never satisfied with their enormous wealth and always want more millions, no matter whom it hurts. They steal from pension funds, banks, the people and government, and little Wall Street investors. Then rather than face punishment, they become petty kings in this world. They are disloyal to America, unpatriotic, and serve their own un-American greed causes and demand more and more and more. I feel this is not the nation into which I was born. I was born in America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, America where people give as much as they receive, America where all people work for the common good and try to leave a better and more prosperous nation for the next generation. America, where people help their neighbors and show charity and mercy. This new America is alien to me. It is an America of greed and corruption and avarice and mean-spirited selfishness and hatred of the common good. It is an America of savage beasts roaring and tearing at the weak and bullying the humble and bullying the peacemakers and the poor and those without means to defend themselves. I'm not welcome here anymore. I don't belong here anymore. It's as if some evil beast controls government, the economy, and our lives now. I must go now. My home is someplace else. Goodbye and God bless you all. God bless the unemployed and poor and elderly and disabled. God bless America and the American people, except the tycoons and politicians. May God retain the sins of tycoons and politicians and phony preachers and send them to the devil. Mark. So like I say, take it with however many grains of salt you want to take it with, or you may want to take it straight. But there it is. When we came back from the trip that we took with on the Progressive Cruise last week, one of the first things is we wheeled into our neighborhood, such as it is. One of the first things that we saw, Kathy and I and Molly, was a house kind of up on a hill. Nice house. Over the years that we've lived here, we never really got to know the people who live there. That's the way it usually is in this country now. But, you know, enough to say hi when we would meet at the mailbox. You know, they'd come down the hill, we'd go up to the road, and we'd meet, hey, how you doing, what's up? The husband had a motorcycle. I don't know what they did. They both worked. I think they had two kids. And about 3-4 months ago, we noticed the house was for sale. And we quickly found out it was a bank sale, repossession. The people were gone. We came home the other day from that trip, and out on the street was what was left of their possessions. I guess they had moved the big furniture out. But the street was just covered with their possessions. I'm so sick of seeing that. That's not the first time. It's right in our neighborhood. And this was the fourth or fifth. I'm so tired of seeing this. What kind of a horrible goddamn place do we live in now?
Residents of Arizona.
It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. A couple more things here to add to the mix. From Prairie 2, his missive for tonight, time to rotate the canned goods. You know, he's been telling us for what? How long, Kathy? 3-4 years. Canned goods. And we've been taking him up on it. What the hell are we going to do with 14 cans of pumpkin? Just kidding. Prairie 2 writes, UN announced today that chronic hunger now affects over a billion people in the world. This is thanks largely to the spike in wheat, corn, and soybean prices on the speculative futures market. Remember that when we get further into what he wrote today. The speculative futures market. Brazil has come out solidly against price controls at the ongoing G20 meeting in Paris. Not surprising, as they are now one of the world's biggest exporters of grain. Yeehaw! France, who now chairs the G20, is taking the position that controls need to be tightened on speculators. And France wants to put restrictions on nations that have imposed export bans. Like Russia? Not much of anything is likely to be done, of course. It's not any big deal for your average finance minister if a few million more people starve to death than in a normal year. You see, the level of normal chronic hunger runs about 850 million people every year. And there's money to be made from grain speculation. If you are a third world dictator and need to buy large amounts of grain to keep your population from revolting, you might be more concerned. But when has that ever happened? Ironically, Egypt learned from deadly food riots in 2008 and was heavily subsidizing food prices. But it wasn't enough to save Mubarak as rumors of dwindling supplies spread. Unlike during the 2008 crisis, this time so far the price of rice has remained stable. That's why in Asia, where 3 billion people depend on rice to live, they haven't seen the upheavals becoming commonplace in the Middle East. This could change with the next global warming-driven crop failure. Surprisingly, many countries in Africa have been enjoying good harvests, and this has kept local prices down there, and the scope of this of the crisis is much smaller than you might expect. So despite the equivalent of the U.S. population being added to the number in danger of malnutrition, if not starvation, it could be much worse. Russia, who has become a major wheat exporter, will not be selling next year, even if they have a good crop. And the weather is not likely to be cooperative everywhere in the world, so the chances of building up food stocks is not good. Contrary to the simplistic explanation of supply and demand that the free market devotees chant whenever one of these totally predictable, unforeseen crises occur, the market will not serve the public. Oh, sure, a few million dead will reduce demand, and in third world countries, this upheaval will decrease production and not increase it. In first world countries, like us, the farmers pretty much produce every kernel that they can already. And the futures market has locked most of them into a set price, so they have no financial reward from the shortage. Wall Street bankers, hedge funds, and multinational corporations, however, will make out like fat bandits forever. Or does he mean however? Americans will see food prices go up sharply despite the relatively small share that farmers see of the retail food dollar. In fact, their share, we're not talking about factory farms here. In fact, their share is half of what it was 30 years ago when they weren't doing quite so well even then. On the other hand, most Americans have more than enough to eat, although millions don't. You don't need to go to the third world to find starving people. Time to rotate your stock of canned goods and take a case to the food bank. Prairie 2. PrairieNumeral2.com. Go to his website and check it all out. Government warned, New York Times, companies warn that higher prices are looming. Rising prices are going to hit most consumer goods, say retailers, food companies, and manufacturers of consumer products. Cotton prices are near their highest level in more than a decade. Leather and polyester costs are jumping. Cotton recently hit its highest level in about 40 years. And iron ore used for steel is fetching extremely high prices. Fetching? I'll be damned. The word fetching in a New York Times article. That is really cool. Fetching. Prices for corn, sugar, wheat, beef, pork, and coffee are soaring. Labor overseas is becoming more expensive, meanwhile, and so are the utility bills to keep a factory running. Chief executive for the Jones Group, whose brands include Nine West and Anne Klein, said, quote, there are cost pressures from virtually everywhere. This guy says prices of his labels will rise 15% to 20% by autumn. Many big companies, including Kraft, Ralph Lauren, and Hanes, you know, the underwear and stockings people, say they cannot hold off any longer and must raise prices to protect some profits. Economists say the increases may eventually show up as inflation, though they are not yet projecting rates that would set off alarms. For consumers, higher prices in stores means there will be a little less extra cash to spend. Extra cash? What the hell are they talking about? Extra cash. Do you have you got extra cash, Kathy? You don't? Neither do I. Adding to the cost of food won't greatly distort most household budgets, it says here. Food, gas, clothing, personal care products, and cleaning and laundry supplies make up less than a quarter of household spending in the United States. People at the bottom of the income scale struggle more as these prices rise, of course, because a larger share of their spending is on such essentials. I'll tell you something. We are, that's all of that. I don't want to do any more on this one. We're heading for something. Do you feel it? Susan in Squim writes, Mike, I'm disgusted with the way the president seems to be ignoring those who most need assistance in this country. One example is a fuel credit allotment for the poor to help them pay their heating costs during these hard times and during a year when winter has been deathly brutal in parts of the country. Yeah, Obama wants to cut it, what, in half or more? At the same time as people such as the families of the unemployed 99ers must decide whether to buy food or fuel, Obama dropped these supplements from his budget. Yet eagerly signed a bill that gave billions in subsidies to the already bloated oil, coal, and gas companies. And I was in a debate last week, last Wednesday. Is Barack Obama really a progressive? Susan goes on. At a time when the middle class is disappearing, tax cuts for billionaires are freely given. The excuse? He had to give cuts to the rich to give cuts to the rest. Well, a person has to have an income before he can get a break on those taxes, and there are an awful lot of people making zero these days. These moves have been shameless. A lot of my friends on the left are calling the president Bush light, but with Obama's health care disappointments, his economic failures, his bumping up of the wars, his increase in remote-controlled bombings in Pakistan, his continued renditions even to torturing one of his own soldiers, he is beginning to look more like Bush on steroids. He is moving so far to the right that I wouldn't be surprised if he joined the teabaggers. What's next? Is he going to complain that he thinks he may not have a proper birth certificate? To anyone who says they have to vote for Obama in 2012 because he's the lesser of two evils and they want to make sure Democrat appoints the next Supreme Court justice, I say bull crap. What makes anyone think that Obama will appoint progressive justices? His last two were far from that. His next one just may be another Clarence Thomas. As for me, I feel really cheated. I knew Obama was not a liberal, but I at least thought he was honorable, a man of his word. So far, he's broken most of his pledges to us and to our allies. I refuse to trust him ever again, and I will not vote for him. Next election, Susan.
They want the UN to be strong. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts. He sure gets me singing those songs. And I'll send all the money you ask for. But don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand?
21 past the hour.
You can take your revenge, but you'll still feel bad.
The there's a double-pronged effort here to crush pretty much the middle of the working class in this country. On the one hand, you have the Republicans and the conservatives who have always hated this country. I'm going to get in more into that third hour of the program tonight. On the other side, you have Obama, who I don't know. I have no idea what he's doing. I really don't. the Republicans are talking about, they haven't produced a budget yet. But they're talking about billions cut from education initiatives like Head Start. Head Start. Head Start, yeah. Right. 30% drop for the Environmental Protection Agency and to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and AmeriCorps. AmeriCorps. Is it Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin? One of those psycho, crazy goddamn people who insist. I think it's Bachmann. Ooh, that's where Barack Obama is training a cadre of stormtroopers. Remember that? $100 million reduction for food inspection. Right, if enough people die of poisoned peanut butter, then the consumer just won't buy that brand anymore. Of course, the only problem with that is that the big peanut butter producers, they just produce peanut butter and then different labels buy it and jam it into jars and sell it. So how do you know which one is going to kill you or make you sick or make your guts fall out? Or, you know, you get gut cramps, you go to the John and your ass falls off or your insides boom, into the toilet, huh? Who needs food inspection? Spending cuts on the WIC program, Women, Infants, Children. The WIC program, right? The program that was initiated, put into effect by Democrats, by liberals, by progressives that said, look, you know, the reality is we live in a capitalist society. And capitalism is murderous. It's all, that's all it is about murder and destruction. And in that process, you know, some American mothers and infants are going to be murdered by capitalism. So here, let us provide, make sure that they have food. Make sure they have the essentials. Milk, rice, food. Oh no! Pull up yourself by your goddamn bootstraps, pregnant woman. Nutritional assistance to expectant mothers and newborn children. The Republicans are going to destroy it. Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin. Wisconsin, listen, Wisconsin, apparently something has happened. If you're listening in Wisconsin, take a look outside. Lower the window. Quick. In your house, your apartment, your trailer, your mansion, wherever you are. Lower the window. Stick your head. Smell that? That's brimstone! Do you know where Wisconsin, do you know where you're going? Wisconsin, for God's sake. Wisconsin! U.S. Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin said that all of that stuff, women and children getting expectant mothers, newborns, no food, but goddamn you if you touch that zygote. Paul Ryan says, hey, this is the price that must be paid. That's what he says. He says, quote, no matter how popular sounding these programs are, they jeopardize our children's future. Do you get that? Another one of these sick right-wing bastards who, if you understand, in order to preserve the future of America's children, Republicans are content to destroy or harm or corrupt or end their present. And when you consider the lifelong cost of malnutrition that happens at a young age, these right-wing bastards are threatening their future, too. I mean, it's okay. So what's the answer? I've been telling you the answer for months. Social democracy, democratic socialism. Huh? The preservation of entrepreneurship, small businesses, family farms, innovative technology, new stuff put together by men and women working outside the corporate structure. Well, I've got something here I want to share with you when we come back. Obama's budget and the rot of American capitalism, okay? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Devil, and so is-
Holocaust was an elaborate hoax. I'm just to the left of the Christian right. I've got a large cross. Do you have a light? You're all compassionate. Yourself is my friend. The last thing I want to do is tax and spend. Guns are great. They make us all safe. Except, of course, for the high death rate. Abortion's wrong, capital punishment's right. Killing poor bad people is something I like. We're all compassionate conservatives, don't you know? Call you.
Liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. What is it about the term democratic socialism that makes most of us Americans just like? I guess it was. I'm talking about those of us over a certain age. I guess it's because of the way we were brought up. There was nothing more horrifying than than the term socialism, unless it was communism. Communism was like militant. Oh my God, the socialism was people starving and you know. I want to share something with you. Yesterday, the Obama administration released its proposed federal budget for fiscal year 2012. After committing trillions in federal bailouts to the banks and billionaires, the White House is demanding cuts that will devastate the working class and particularly the poorest and most vulnerable sections. The $1.1 trillion in cuts for the next decade proposed by the White House is to be only the starting point for further cuts. As spokesmen for both big business parties acknowledged, Senate Budget Chairman Kent Conrad, a Democrat, declared, quote, "We've got to do substantially more than $1 trillion worth of deficit reduction in the next decade," end quote. Republican House Speaker John Boehner said, quote, "There's no limit to the amount we are willing to cut," end quote. Democrats and Republicans agree on gargantuan military spending. An uninterrupted flow of funds to the financial aristocracy and continued tax breaks for corporate America and the wealthy. As a top White House official told the press at a background briefing on the budget, quote, "The debate in Washington is not whether to cut or disband. We both agree we should cut. The question is how we cut and what we cut," end quote. The Obama budget projects that the 10-year cumulative deficit will reach a staggering $10.4 trillion. By attempting to wring such vast sums from the hides of the population, the ruling elite is trying to set American society back to conditions not seen for generations. This doesn't quite register with most people, does it? For some reason, it just doesn't compute. I mean, and I certainly can understand why. I spent a week with 100 progressives on a boat, big-ass boat. And we 100 really stayed to ourselves for a number of reasons. One of the reasons that none of the 100 that made this trip, those of us who were speakers and those who came along to join in, not just, you know, the people that came on the trip, not the speakers, but the other people, they weren't there to listen. They were there to hear, okay, what do you guys got to say? Okay, here's what I have to say. You know, it was that kind of thing, which is the way it should be. But we were 100 out of about 2,600 on this boat. And the other 2,500, I'm not counting the crew, of the 2,600 other passengers on this boat, none was non-white. Maybe there might have been one or two. That's the truth. And of the staff of the boat, the 860 employees that take care of the 2,600 guests, all, with the exception of the executive crew, the captain, who is Dutch, and his XO and his officers, everyone else on the boat was non-white. And I am here to tell you that unless I totally misread what I was seeing on that boat, with the exception of We 100, the other people on that boat didn't have a clue as to what was going on in the real world. Now, you could see it on the faces of the workers in the ports that we pulled into, the black people and the brown people who were there to, whether they like it or not, to serve these white folks. One way or the other, the white folks are going to be served. And the resentment, the steely resentment, got to do this, got to make a living, got to feed my family. But Jesus Christ, I'd like to put a knife in these white bastards' hearts. I mean, that was palpable. You could smell it. But I digress. Programs to be cut include not only those targeted by Obama and the Republicans in the current budget debate, home heating assistance, Pell Grants, women, infants, children, Head Start, etc., but the much larger entitlement program, Social Security, Medicare, which will face cuts later in the budget process. The social impact will be incalculable. As hundreds of thousands of people face the bitter cold of winter without heat and gas, Obama's proposing halving the grossly inadequate federal assistance that is available. As students graduate with record debt and no job prospects, the administration is proposing significant cuts in government aid. Such gross indifference to social distress is repeated in every sphere. Significant cuts to Social Security, Medicare, which amounts to denying America's elderly their right to pensions and health care, will have an enormous and even broader impact. Behind the so-called debate in Washington and the media over the budget is a massive lie. The claim that the budget deficits are a product of excessive social spending. Obama's budget director, Jacob Lew, summed up this grotesque falsification in an op-ed column published in New York Times February 6th under the headline, "The Easy Cuts Are Behind Us." Mr. Lew claimed that the cause of the projected budget deficits were decisions to make two large tax cuts without offsetting them and to create a Medicare prescription drug benefit without paying for it, combined with the effects of the recession. The list is notable for what it leaves out, the cost of two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, which runs into the trillions, and the bank bailouts, where more trillions in public funds were placed at the disposal of the financial aristocracy with no questions asked. The military budget itself accounts for the lion's share of that 10-year projected deficit, $10 trillion. More than $7 trillion of that is the weapons industry. Lew's more fundamental mission, however, is the grotesque class inequality that pervades American society. The top 1% of the U.S. population owns over one-third of the country's wealth. The greatest wealth, however, is concentrated in an even smaller layer. Indeed, the $1.1 trillion in proposed cuts, which will have a terrible impact on the lives of millions of people, that $1.1 trillion is somewhat less than the combined wealth of only the 400 richest Americans. Do you understand that? I don't think you do. That's a hard one to get your brain around. That $1.1 trillion in cuts, that's going to be devastating to millions of people in this country, is less than the combined wealth of only the 400 richest Americans. That is a prescription for disaster. You know it. I know it. The arguments presented by the ruling elite for the cuts are staggeringly hypocritical. As they drown in floods of cash, they insist that no money is available for workers' most basic needs. Workers must reject this argument out of hand. They are not responsible for the orgy of swindling and profiteering that produced the 2008 Wall Street crash. Workers are not responsible for that and pushed the world economy to the deepest slump since the Great Depression. On the contrary, an essential feature of the speculative binge was that the share of national income received by workers has shrunk to the lowest level in nearly 100 years. Underlying the rise of the financial aristocracy, which exercises control over the entire political system now, is the failure of the world capitalist system as a whole. In amassing its wealth, this tiny layer of the population, concentrated above all in the U.S., has overseen a vast destruction of industry and social infrastructure. The ruling classes of every country now openly proclaim that the maintenance of their system depends upon an unprecedented destruction in the living conditions of the broad masses of the population. The people have got to suffer so that the rich elites can continue. Does that make sense to you, Drew Seeger? Is that the way God ordained it? Is that the way it should be? These measures will provoke mass opposition. The revolutionary struggles in Egypt, in which protests and strikes of millions of workers and youth forced the resignation of a U.S.-backed dictator that ruled the country for more than 30 years. A struggle in Egypt points to the forms, the struggle that was spread worldwide in the coming period. Mass unemployment, record inequality, and the corruption of the political system are common to Egypt and the United States and are, in fact, universal. At the foundation of this system is the principle that economic life must be subordinated to private profit and the maintenance of the wealth of those who control the giant banks and corporations. When we come back, the solution.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Everybody scatters.
Time before the hour. Okay, given all that, here's your answer. The working class can secure its interests only through the overturn of the capitalist system as a whole. That is, the reorganization of economic life to meet social need. In every aspect of its policies, and of its social being, the ruling class itself makes the case for socialist revolution. So simple, huh? Patrick Martin wrote that at the WSWS.org, World Socialist website. You can check it out if you like. We had Mike Malloy's approach to democratic socialism. Where is it? Oh, yeah. Nationalize these key industries: banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, weapons production. Everything else, small businesses, family-owned farms, high-tech firms, all sorts of startup businesses, leave them alone as long as labor and environmental laws are followed. Is it not becoming obvious? I don't know. I feel like a broken-ass record. I really do. Pretty much the same thing on this program every single night. And it must be hell to listen to this every single night if that's what you do. It really must be. I mean, b- But is it not becoming like a broken record? I mean, is this stuff difficult? Is it hard to understand what's going on? I mean, really, is it? I don't think it is. I think it's fairly obvious what is happening. And I know that you didn't, if you're of a certain age, I don't know what the age is. If you're over what, 50? 45? You never thought that you'd see this. And that's why I think it's so hard to let go of that idea that, oh, everything's going to be all right. It always has been in the past, Mike. Jesus Christ, cut us some slack. It's going to be okay. Well, you know, when you have little kids and grandkids and nieces and nephews and little creatures like that running around underfoot, and you look at them, you go, damn, you know, you're going to go to college. What are you going to be when you grow up? Yada, yada, yada. You know, when that's happening, when you're witness to that every day, and then you take a look at the reality out here, Jesus, God, what is it we're supposed to do? Anybody got any answers? Anybody got any clues? Send me an email. Tell me what you think the answer is. The economic system that this country more or less has been in thrall of and captive to for the past 200 and some odd years is destroying us. Isn't it? I mean, isn't it? Come on. Tell me it's not. Tell me, no, Malloy, you're out of your mind. Man, everything's cool. Everything's all right. Just listen to the teabaggers. You know, trust, believe, everything will be okay. It always has been in the past. So what do you think? You know, I think sometimes that, you know, I've just got it completely wrong. That, you know, it's that old story, you're going to believe me or you're going to believe your lying eyes? You know, that kind of thing, right? I don't want to believe my lying eyes. I want to find some kind of an answer someplace. I want to wake up from what is turning out to be a really nasty ass bad dream, isn't it? Or is it? Is this just, you know, no, come on, Malloy, take a break. Jesus, God, cut yourself some slack. Why don't you go on a vacation, Malloy? Take some time off. That, you know, that's the thing that is amazing to me is how adept we are in this country at denial. Avoidance and denial. I mean, we really, really are. We are. And look what's happening in Wisconsin. They're trying desperately to get organized, to resist what Wisconsin, again, lower your windows. If you live in Madison or wherever you live in Wisconsin, Marshfield, where do you live? Green Bay? Lower the windows and take a deep inhale. Smell that? That's hell! And the new governor there, the new, all these Republicans in Wisconsin? What did you people do? I mean, I'm used to it. I live in the South. I live with a bunch of bohunk freak legislators. Well, we're going to pass a law down here in Georgia to keep them illegals out and to prevent Sharia law from being established. That's what they do down here. Not all the illegals, because they have one hell of a peanut crop down here and cotton that has to be picked every year. And we're going to let some of them in, but you know, I'm being normal. But Wisconsin? Wisconsin? And organizers there are trying to get together people to march on the state house tomorrow to stop the destruction of the public sector unions. Are you going to respond to this, Wisconsin, or not? All right, I'm going to take some deep breaths and come back. And I told you it's going to be a rough night. Stick around if you dare. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. So the as we've been talking about during the program tonight, the battle is joined on seeing who can destroy what's left of the middle class quicker. Will it be these insane, miserable bastard Republicans, or is it going to be this pseudo progressive that we have in the White House, this phony Democrat, Barack Obama? As we mentioned earlier in the program, some of the things that he said this morning during his press conference, where he tried to justify and explain what he has in mind with his $3 trillion budget. the people who are going to be taking it on the nose, on the chin, and various other parts of the anatomy, the hardest, of course, are the poor, the lower middle class, the working middle class, what's left of it. I don't know. I just wonder sometimes how much, well, and if you're a regular listener to the program, you know this, how much longer this can continue. I've quoted to you many times something that a guy named Clint Gold wrote over 10 years ago. It was in a reader's forum in the Tulsa World newspaper, where Gold was talking about the social safety net as it was built in this country after World War II, and it was built by Democrats. Republicans never contributed anything, nothing. Republicans never have. This is a part that astonishes me, is how it's stupefying to me. How can a political party, the Republicans, continue to exist when they do not have and never have had the best interests of the country at heart? Never. Not even 10% of their rhetoric or their activities, 5%, 3%. Have ever benefited the working class in this country, the middle class. It's never been there, never. And yet the Republicans continue to present themselves as a political party, and they continue to get votes. They continue to go take public office. I cannot understand that. I can't. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance. None of those things have ever been sponsored or supported or initiated by the right wing, by the Republicans, by the conservatives in this country. Never, not once. Never. And yet they get votes. They get votes from people. They get votes from people who receive those compensations, those entitlements, I believe is the word now, entitlements. Corporate welfare. welfare for the common folk who are unable, for whatever reason, to take care of themselves or their family. All that's all from Democrats. Don't even talk about civil rights. Earlier today, John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis, was one of the recipients of the Medal of Freedom. John Lewis, who got his head busted open at the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Alabama, the Selma March. John Lewis, who was beaten up surely as many times as demonstrators in Tehran or Cairo or any place else where they're demonstrating in favor of freedom and liberty. But John Lewis never had any help from conservatives. Never. Never. Student grants, student loan programs, Republicans have always been against those. And now Barack Obama wants to cut the Pell Grants, effectively ending them. The hell is going on? And when you stop and think about safety and environmental laws, workplace safety laws, you remember the book The Jungle? Did you read that when you were in school? Written by Upton Sinclair. Did you read that? Part of, I remember one passage, it may be apocryphal, but I think I remember it, where they're talking about some of the rendering plants in Chicago in the meatpacking district where sausage or bologna or something was being made. And if a worker fell in, the machine could keep grinding. You think that's true? You think that really happened? But because of what Upton Sinclair wrote, because of what Steinbeck wrote, The Jungle, of course, was not fiction. Grapes of Wrath, sort of. Because of what these people wrote, safety laws, occupational health and safety rules were applied, labor laws, child labor laws. Republicans never did any of this. Conservatives have never contributed one single stinking thing. Nothing. Well, everything they've contributed has been stinking to this country. What have they contributed? Greed, filth, lies, wars, deceptions. They have tried for generation after generation after generation to destroy the working class, prevent the middle class from emerging, create a neo-feudal state. And it looks like they're about to succeed. I say it looks like. That doesn't mean they're going to succeed. But it looks like it right now. Wage laws. You know, minimum wage. Who do you think came up with minimum wage? Republican? Do you think Republicans did that? Conservatives? How about the right to collective bargaining? You know, where unions are formed and workers get together and say to the bosses, okay, we'll go ahead and work in your mines, your fields, your factories, your offices, whatever, but this is what we want in return for our labor. I mean, when you stop and think about it, a person is born. What do they have in terms of consciousness? And forget this religious nonsense. What does a person have? 70, 80, 60, 40, 30? Isn't it written down someplace? What is it, 70 years? 80, 60, 40, 30? And if all that time is spent working for some capitalist in order to do what? To buy junk? Well, if that's what the worker chooses to do, okay. But shouldn't he or she have the right then to bargain collectively for how much the worker is going to be paid? If a person is willing to give their life over to some capitalist enterprise, shouldn't there be fair compensation? What's fair compensation? Remember that article of the Lordstown Syndrome? Was it Syndrome? About Lordstown, Ohio, this huge automotive factory. I've driven by it a couple of times. It was out on I-75. Remember that, Kathy? I think one time we drove by it on a trip to Toledo. A massive assembly plant for automobiles. I don't remember the manufacturer. It's really unimportant who the manufacturer was. But the point was, what happens to people in America, you know, they're 19, 18, get out of high school, decide not to go in the military or whatever, can't afford to go to college, so they go into, or they used to, go into the labor force. And it talked about, in the Lordstown Syndrome, it talked about how, okay, the worker was compensated because of strong unions at the time, UAW and various other unions. But what happened to the worker, to the man or woman, once they went into the factory? What happened? They named it. They named it the Lordstown Syndrome. We'll talk about it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mark Molloy.
Mike Molloy.
Look at the state of the world. 21 past the hour. So what? I'm just kind of rambling here about the uselessness and even worse than uselessness of the Republican Party, the conservative mindset. Anything that's ever happened in this country that was good had absolutely nothing to do with conservatives or Republicans or right wingers. And I'm fascinated by the fact that people continue to vote for these bastards. I don't get that. But we're talking about the Lordstown Syndrome, Lordstown, Ohio, an automobile plant that opened in the mid-60s, I think, late 60s in Ohio, and a massive, massive automotive plant. Now, there was representation for the workers, United Auto Workers, but what happened was, if I remember this right, I think it was General Motors, they would speed up the line. And the workers were supposed to produce a set number of cars a day, and it became brutal. People would go into this kind of environment, and for 8 or 9 hours a day, never see the sun, never breathe fresh air. And finally, one of the few worker revolts in modern times, anyway, in this country. I'm not talking about the strikers. I'm not talking about people who prior to the unions. These were unionized workers. But the work was so numbing and just, I don't know, the workers couldn't cope with it. I couldn't have coped with it. And so they started sabotaging the cars that would come off the plant. They would off the line. They would slip the seats or snip a wire or leave something disconnected. It was worker sabotage. Alcoholism, drug use became rampant on the job, off the job. And sociologists developed the term Lordstown Syndrome of workers whose only way of rebelling was to rebel against within the very place where they were working. That's what they saw as their only way of releasing this horrible ennui or angst or just the deadening of working in this goddamn place. Now, it could have been corrected, but capitalism has never been interested in that, and for the most part, in the modern era, union organizers were—I don't know—the unions themselves. I've become suspicious of what their motives were. My experience with the United Auto Workers was not good. When I worked for IE America, we had a little network that they owned that I worked for. Hartman worked for. A couple of us worked for. And when the new management at the UAW took over, some freak named Gettelfinger, The first thing they did was set out to destroy the contracts that workers had busted their asses to get. Gettelfinger gave away more to the auto industry than anybody before him. And, of course, they destroyed the IE America Radio Network. What was the point of having a network? Let's get rid of it. But I think of the Lordstown syndrome often, about how mind-numbing and brain-deadening and anti-life going into one of those horrible places to produce junk. I think it was the Chevy Vega, wasn't it? You remember Chevy Vega? Little ass stupid car that was supposed to compete with Hondas and Toyotas. This is back in the day when Hondas and Toyotas were starting to encroach on the U.S. auto market. But I digress. I digress. We're talking about the things that Republicans have been against, like they are now. And now we have this Republican light, another Republican light president. I'm sorry if that pisses you off. Take a look at his record. Take a look at what he talked about this morning. Take a look at what is due to be slashed and removed from the budget. Everything from home heating assistance to poor people who are poor and desperate because we have no leadership in this country to provide jobs. How do you provide jobs? Well, government doesn't provide jobs. The hell they don't. Of course they do. By making the environment such that business will be here. Or public works projects. It worked in the 30s. Why do you think it wouldn't work now? This country's heading for a brick wall. You know, it really is. But I digress again. Safety laws. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, whose function it was to make sure that people did not fall into vats of entrails that were going to be made into bologna and ground up with the bologna and then served, you know, at your friendly neighborhood grocery store. Republicans have railed against safety laws in workplace safety laws since they were first put into effect. Oh, well, that's too burdensome. You know, that interferes with capitalism. Environmental laws, forget about it. Wage laws, the right to collective bargaining. And what did collective bargaining unionism, what did that bring? Brought paid medical insurance because we've never had a government in this country that was sane enough to establish medical health care as a right. Not a privilege. When is it a privilege to go see a doctor and have a diseased appendix looked at? When has that become a right? I mean a privilege. When? There's more. Stick around. We'll be back in a minute.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. No, I just feel like ruminating a bit on the difference between what used to be the difference between the political parties. Not necessarily the difference, but the utter and absolute failure of Republicans or conservatives in this country to ever have contributed anything positive. What they've contributed is confusion, disorder, upset, discord, lies, deceit. And like I mentioned the other night, the American public will never get the straight story, information that we need to have until the last Fox, that would be Rupert Murdoch's terrorist television network. The last Fox television commentator is strangled with the entrails of the last conservative radio host. Then maybe some truth will get out. But back to what the Republicans have never done, conservatives have never done, that idea of collective bargaining, it's been turned in, like the word liberal, it's been turned into, the word union has been turned into something negative. And the attack, the assault, it's a full-throated attack now on public employee unions, teachers unions, police unions, firefighter unions, state worker unions, office worker, all kinds of the only significant section of the American economy left that is represented by union workers, of course, is the public sector, so-called. So now the attack is against them. Now, the total number of workers in this country, about 7 or 8% are unionized. And of that 7 or 8%, what would you suggest? Probably 90% of that would be public workers. The butchery of the union movement is almost complete. Who'd have thunk it? All the people who bled and died and had their heads broken open for the sake of collective bargaining, to make sure that workers got a fair shake up against the bosses, up against capitalism. All for nothing? Pensions. Paid vacations. Time off. Time and a half. Where do you think that came from? Where do you think the idea of a 40-hour work week came from? 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And even that can be mind and soul destroying. Take a look at the Lordstown syndrome we were talking about a second ago. But the 40-hour work week, where did that come from? Where you give 40 hours, 8 hours a day, a third of your life, given to the machinery of production of what? I'm not talking about people who own their own business and really enjoy it and put in 12, 14, 16-hour days. Hell, we've done that. Kathy and I have done that. I'm not talking about the small family farmers who work 18 hours a day. I'm not talking about cattle breeders or horse breeders or people who artisans or craftspeople, people who work with their hands. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the capitalist machine, that hideous, horrible maw into which workers are funneled. And when they come out, well, they were told, okay, here's the deal. You give us 25, 30 years of your life, and when it's all over, you go in as a young person, you come out, somebody's had their light snuffed out, and we'll give you a pension. Well, the pensions are gone now, right? Paid vacations, pensions, paid medical insurance, workers' compensation. All brought about by progressives, liberals, Democrats. Nothing ever contributed to this society. Nothing positive. Nothing. And again, I've issued this challenge so many times, I'm sick of saying it. But if you're a right-winger, if you're a Republican, if you can think of one thing that your corrupt political organization has ever contributed to the betterment of the American people, call me. Send me an email. Send me a telegram. You remember telegrams. Get a hire one of those airplanes to write it in the sky. You bunch of freaks. Nothing ever good has come from the right in this country. 40-hour work week, time and a half pay for over a 40-hour work week. Jesus. All Democrats. And now the attack is on home ownership, led by Barack Obama and the Republican thugs and thieves and liars. They want to end, they being the Republicans and Obama. And don't kid yourself. Like I said on this recent progressive cruise that we were invited to attend and debate some of these issues, the issue came up, is Barack Obama a progressive? Jesus God, it still requires talk. That Obama hasn't demonstrated fully, where there's no doubt left that he's not a progressive. I don't know what he is, a center-right politician. But he's damn sure not a progressive. But housing. Prior to World War II, most people in this country rented. About, as a matter of fact, before World War II, I think the statistic was 70% of the people in this country were renters. And by the 1970s, which is where everything started to be destroyed, that had been reversed. About 70% of Americans were buying their home or homeowners. And now that's being reversed again. Only this time, the Obama administration and the Republicans and the conservatives want a nation of renters again. All the home building that was done. Do you realize what has happened to the home market, to the housing market in this country? I read something in the Times the other day that it continues to deteriorate in terms of value. Home prices continue to fall. A double dip, triple dip recession for people who thought they had an investment in their homes. Nobody's buying and nobody can sell. Oh, there's still people buying, sure. I'm talking about that upper 2 or 3%, the ones that still have 50,000 square foot homes built for them or $20 million apartments in New York City built for them. You know, those people are never touched. That top 1 or 2%, they're never touched. The only time they're touched is when the guillotine is brought out and they're beheaded because of the corruption. Metaphorically speaking, of course. Huh? The GI Bill. Corporate America, capitalist America has always demanded for the past, well, since we decided to become a global presence, an empire. Soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines were convinced that they were fighting for mom and apple pie and, or was it cherry pie, and democracy and freedom. Tell me something, truth seeker. Take a look at any country we've invaded and ultimately destroyed since, let's put a dividing line, a nice bright dividing line, since World War II. Name one where we've gone in for democracy. The democracy really was the intent or the result. Can you think of one? Go ahead. I'll wait. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, time's up. That's right. Not one. The Philippines. Anywhere in Central America, South America, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico. We were in Puerto Rico last week. Rented a car. Kathy and Molly and I, we were heading away from the madding crowd out toward Fajardo, which is on the, what is it, southwest part of the island? Fajardo. East? Is it east? The reason we wanted to go out there was there are kiosks along the beach out there run by, it's Luquillo Beach, Luquillo. And there are kiosks set up along the beach run by local people. This is not tourist area. Luquillo is not, no es para turistas. Es verdad? No es para turistas. But we've been there before, and it's a nice beach. And what is real nice about it is these little kiosks set up by local people where they're food kiosks, and you can get seafood and hell, hot dogs, hamburgers, stews, fish soup, whatever. But it's like, I don't know what would it be equivalent of, Kathy? Coney Island back in the turn of the last century. Where the immigrants would, all these little stands where you could buy honest to God food. Anyway, we went out there. On the way out, we went by the, in downtown San Juan, the Capitol building, anti-American demonstration. Oh my God! A little bit of washover from Egypt, I guess. But there it was. There's a woman with a bullhorn. Preaching, not statehood, not what she was talking about, yelling about, agitating the crowd about, as well she should, was to get the United States the hell out of her country. I mean, my God, Puerto Rico, How did we come to own Puerto Rico? We'll be right back. Before the hour, I guess I've just wasted this whole hour talking about how the Republicans have never done anything to assist this country. They have never been patriotic. They have never done anything for the working people of this country, for the middle class. They've never done anything to produce a middle class. It's all been on the backs of liberals and progressives and Democrats. And that's why I hate to see the Democratic Party now being headed by Barack Obama, who is a corporatist. Who is Republican light. He governs a center-right government, not unlike, Silvio Berlusconi of Italy, I guess. But we've been talking about, or I've been talking about, what Democrats have done. And I think about all the people who vote Republican not realizing that every single positive thing in their life, everything, including their bootstraps, comes as a result of progressives, liberals, Democrats, and what we've done over the past 100 years in this country. Every single aspect of a person's life, whether right wing, left wing, I don't give a damn, is influenced, touched, colored, made productive by what Democrats have done, what liberals have done, what conservatives have done. Nothing, absolutely nothing. And again, and again, and again, over and over, I defy any right-winger, any Republican, any Tea Party jerkwads to ever respond, which you don't. You respond by saying, I hope your daughter drinks bleach. And give me an idea, you right-wingers, just anything that your side of the political fence has ever done for the American public. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Farmers. Bankers didn't want to make loans to farmers. Too risky. So the Farmers Home Administration was set up by Democrats. Electricity. Tennessee Valley Authority. That brought, well, electricity all over the South, all over the rural South. Maybe that wasn't such a good idea. I don't know. The GI Bill. Remember, Republicans bitterly opposed the GI Bill that was passed into law after World War II. Because there were all these returning veterans. Everybody coming back to the United States wanting a job in corporate America, that for the most part wanted to side with the Germans during World War II anyway, get rid of the pesky Jews, get rid of those nasty Eastern Europeans, go ahead and establish a strong British-German-American hegemony over the entire world. Well, the leadership of this country said, no, we're going to fight the fascists. And that really pissed off the capitalists. The capitalists hated that. They just, oh my God, Hitler's our man. Anyway, when the war was over, the capitalists thought, okay, well, there's a way we can still benefit from this. Look at all these returning soldiers. How many of them? 6, 7, 8 million. They're coming back. Oh, God, that's going to depress wages. That's going to drive prices up, depress wages. We're going to get rich. Well, not quite. The GI Bill was passed. And a lot of returning veterans used the GI Bill to go to college. God only knows how many little businesses were formed, how many entrepreneurs were developed out of that that post-World War II, how many artists, writers, painters, potters, business people, small businesses, machine shops, this, that, the other thing, because of the GI Bill. What they get, $20 a week for 52 weeks for the unemployed GI to help get started. That was a lot of money in those days. The Veterans Administration back then provided more than 2 million home loans. And Republicans didn't want any of it. No, no, we don't want that. Put the sons of bitches to work. Here, let them make bootstraps. And the banking industry, this filthy, corrupt, degenerate banking industry in this country. I would no more do business with a bank than open up a vein in my throat. But what was created by liberals to save their filthy industry? Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. By the way, that doesn't insure your money. Ah, you think it insures your money? Oh, no, no, no. That insures the bank. So the bank can pay you your money when they fail. The government steps in. It doesn't insure you. Deposits insured up to $200,000. Yeah, for the bank. You might be the beneficiary, but only insofar as the government backs it. The bankers don't give a goddamn. They never have. They never will. They will rip you from chin to belly button and take everything that you have and then come back for more, which is what's going on right now. Right now. Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation. And the Securities and Exchange Commission that saved Wall Street's ass after Wall Street decided to rip us to pieces. How many depressions have we gone through in this country? Seven? Nine? Every single time. Who brings it about? Is it brought about by locusts eating the corn crop? Is it brought about by floods destroying the wheat crop? Is it caused by earthquakes devouring factories? No. Who causes depressions? That's right. The bankers, the capitalists, corporate America, they do it to us every time. And every time we bail them out. And then wait for them to do it again. So think about it occasionally, truth seeker. When you have a minute, just think about what have conservatives, Republicans, Tea Parties, or this filthy pig Glenn Beck's type, or Limbaugh, what have they ever done or advocated for the average American? You know who the average American is? Me. You. We're the average American. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.